We really shook the pillars of heaven, didn't we? Wang.
Welcome to the Six Demon Bag Podcast, where we pull random topics related to writing, comics, movies, all that kind of thing.
Hey guys, this is Ed. I write various fictions. Horror, science fiction.
I'm Jeff. I write science fiction and horror.
I'm Drew. I'm a gamer and anime fan.
This is Ryan, and I fancy myself a maker.
Did you guys ever, like, try to make your own comic books growing up?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a syndicated comic strip artist.
Yeah, me too.
Because I read that the most popular ones made like $1 million a year or something, and I was like
Peanuts and
easy
stuff? Like Peanuts or something.
Yeah, so
yeah,
you
I
had
wanted
to
do that.
So I would go on like United Feature Syndicate and King Features and all their websites or their whatever early web presence was, and like newspapers were still kind of happening back then.
Yeah,
it was like just at the tail end. It was right before the internet kind of blew up.
Gone now, swept
yeah,
away.
Yeah, so it's not even really a thing anymore, I don't think. I wonder if any new newspaper strips happen at this point. Probably not.
Berkeley Breathe
on the
puts
web,
Bloom County on Facebook.
Yeah. But so I started like 3 or 4 different strips, but the requirement was you had to have 24 strips finished before you could submit, and I could never get past like 3 or 4.
That's a great requirement.
It's a good way to
like,
weed people
I've
out.
Got so many ideas, and you're like, I can't do this every week forever.
Yeah. Weeds out the weeds.
Were they
out the,
were they gag strips with like?
Yeah, they were just they were
like
they
four panels.
Good,
the, four
yes.
the jokes like, in the last one.
Exactly. One was about a little troll who mined ice. He was like an ice miner. And the first strip, it was like his block of ice had a bunch of gemstones in it, so he couldn't use it because it was worthless. Because they were just like a bunch of rocks stuck in his ice.
I have these characters that I came up with in grade school, all on a joke from my buddy Tom, and I still draw them to this day, but
yeah.
There's no story for them. It's like, my buddy was making me laugh in grade school, like second grade or something, with his high-pitched voice and saying warm pop and stuff all the time. So I made this character that looked like a green beaker. A beaker of green liquid with feet and a pointy nose, and he always had like Mickey Mouse gloves and a gun, and I don't know what the hell. then it went to there was a ketchup bottle named Rudolfo Jones. I got all these characters, and I have no idea what the hell they are. It's something about. I think what I came up with was that the liquid inside him could accidentally, if he spilled it on something, he could animate something. So he had all these friends that were animated. There was like. He used a toilet at one point, and the toilet became, you know, alive.
Oh, dear boy. Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, let's see, yeah.
But that was the comic strip. I was trying to do, like, the same thing you were doing. I did the school newspaper strip in my high school. It was called For the Birds. It was, because we were the Thornwood Thunderbirds.
The Erty Birds.
But, yeah, and it was like, autobiographical, and it was really, crazy. But,
well, yeah.
A comic book, like a straight-up superhero comic. Do you remember a TV show that had the kid from Red Sonja? You remember the kid from Red Sonja? The karate
Ernie game? Reyes Jr.?
Ernie Reyes Jr., yeah. Now he's in Run. He was in The Rundown and stuff. And he was one of the Mutant Ninja Turtles, right?
Sure was.
Which one?
Also Kino.
Donatello? Or?
I believe he was Donatello in the first movie, or for part of it anyway.
So he was on a show, and I think it was with Robert Urich, where Robert Urich was a cop. And he like
sidekicks,
but side the pilot of it.
I've been doing a lot of Ernie Reyes Jr. research lately.
The pilot was called Electric Knight.
Oh, yeah,
and that title like stuck in my head. I was like, that's so bad, Electric Knight.
Dirk Diggler.
But I also saw Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon around the same time and everything.
So good.
So like that end sequence where he's punching,
Last
they're punching,
electric
and it's
dragon.
Like, it's like electrifying guys and stuff. And then at the same time,
the glow.
I also saw Above the Law. So I was way into like Steven Seagal at the time and everything. So I drew this adventure comic called The Electric Ninja that was like basically Steven Seagal, a Steven Seagal lookalike guy and everything. But he was a ninja, and his suit was outfitted with this like harness where when he punched guys, it would like crackle electricity and like blast them and stuff. And it was bloody and crazy, and it didn't go very far. But Electric Ninja was my comic when I was
I wish I'd written that instead of Criterion. Jeez,
yeah,
sounds awesome.
I had that comic strip that I tried to do. I tried to do another comic strip with these animals. Like each animal was based on a music genre. So there was like a rock rabbit, a country bear, a punk skunk, and I think I only got one strip done of that. I think I had one more, which I can't remember. And then I tried to do a full on comic book of the ice miner guy, and it was going to be like Labyrinth. He was going to get stuck in a maze.
Mm-hmm.
And I called it Amazed. And there's actually some pretty okay art from it, which I obviously don't have access to right now. But
what was your best gag in that comic? Like, can you remember something? Like, it's you said in there. Then?
I think I probably copied a lot subconsciously. There was a meteor coming, and he was like, "Ooh, I better get indoors." And then the meteor was just gonna hit his house. I don't know.
In Electric Ninja. He busted into a room with these drug dealers, and they had like Uzis or something. And so he was fighting all these guys, and he came to the one guy, and he was like, "This guy's armed" in the caption. And then he cut his arms off with a katana, and he was like, "Now he's unarmed."
Like, fantastic.
Or disarmed or something.
The culmination of my comic stripping was in high school. We had a paper too. And I was like, well, you know, I'll do like an adventure comic strip. Or actually, even before that, I got involved with the paper. I decided I was going to do like a superhero strip. And so I wrote like four or five issues, like four panel issues of this superhero comic where there was like these team of superheroes, and they recruited like a young, they were like, "Oh, this kid has the power. He's the one, blah, blah, blah." And they like recruit him into the thing. It was really bad and the art wasn't very good. But one of the teachers saw it and was like, "Ooh, this is great. We'll put it in the newspaper." And I was like, "Yay, I've arrived." And so we published the first issue, and it was a serialized adventure strip. So it was like next week on, you know, the continuing adventures. And like one of the other kids in school was like, "I don't get it." Like, they thought there was supposed to be a joke, you know, because it was a four-panel strip.
It's no jokes.
And so funny. I got really discouraged and despondent, and I didn't do any more after
that. Oh, that sucks.
I actually did web comics for years. I had a website, and I did three-panel gags and four panels.
I remember when you were doing
full-page ones, and I was really into it, but way back in the day, in like elementary school, when V,
the miniseries,
was on TV,
my friend
and I made like a fake school newspaper to circulate in class, and I made a comic strip, and it was basically a ripoff of V the Final Battle, but with like the aliens were turds or something. It was very strange. That's all I remember. And
I don't want to see that alien birth scene, that's for sure.
And we printed up a bunch of them and handed them out in class. And everyone was like, "Yeah, when's the next one coming out?" I'm like, "Soon." I'm like, "Mom, Dad, everyone loved it." And they're like, "Well, we can't afford to keep printing this out." Because this is like back when we had a dot matrix printer, and you had to like tear the things off the side of
the paper. Those stupid little
paper was expensive. Yeah, ink was expensive. And they're like, "Yeah, no, we indulged you once."
Aww.
Yeah. But, you know, fair enough.
That's nice. My thing was like, "Ooh, I finally put myself out there." I made a career in middle school and high school of shrinking into the shadows.
Like an electric ninja?
Like a regular ninja, I would say. Electric ninja is probably less shadow prone.
Like an unpowered ninja.
And then I finally put myself...
Now it's unpowered.
In the fourth. I finally put myself in front of everybody, and they were like, "Boo."
Oh.
And I was like, "I knew it all these years. I was right."
Bastards.
I actually had a gag, which was Bob versus the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And in the official handbook for the Marvel Universe, it had every character running in one direction.
Yeah.
And so I made like an issue one, which they're all running at this guy. He's like, "Come at me, you bastards." And then I did one where he killed a random guy named Vampire Man.
That's funny. Who was Bob? Was he just a regular looking guy?
He was a guy that was obsessed, an unpowered guy that was obsessed with killing superheroes.
Oh, almost like, almost yeah. like in your book. Cool.
It basically was a way to just play with my encyclopedic knowledge of superhero encyclopedias. Mm-hmm. Okay, new topic. Favorite comic book moment. And sorry, guys, I'm super congested.
Well, I did talk about that reveal that Optimus Prime was still alive and his head was being kept alive. That was pretty crazy.
That's weird. Yeah. Was it dripping goo?
No, it was just... suspended above like... it was like in a robotic womb kind of chamber, and like he was suspended with these like pylons driven into his neck and everything, and it was
wires
were coming off him and stuff, and it was very creepy and cool. God, I talked about so many just like earlier. What about you, Ryan? Death of Gwen Stacy.
Don't know. Well, I never read those.
Yeah, you didn't read them. I didn't either, but. I was
super into the Thanos quest.
Uh-huh.
And so I could pick out, you know, separate moments, but the whole thing was such a trip because Thanos was a bad guy, but he was on a quest. And so you're kind of rooting for him to get all the Infinity Stones so he could murder, you know, the whole universe or at least half the universe. So it was very strange book for like a kid to be reading where you're really rooting for this galactic genocidal madman.
Mm-hmm.
But he was so overpowered. I mean, basically he was always outgunned and outnumbered, but he always outmaneuvered everyone. And that's what made me love the character.
Mm-hmm.
Is like he'd go up against all these people who had Infinity Stones and could do stuff, you know, that he couldn't, but he would always outsmart them or out-cheat them or just do something brutal and take them down. But yeah, there are many favorite moments from that little series.
The comic that I was way into in the 80s was this 80s iteration of The Shadow. It got me into the character and everything. I mean, my dad had old-time radio tapes of The Shadow. That I would listen to in the Bronco when we'd be on trips and stuff. But
The trunk, from the roof, from the hood.
From the back seat. But it had, you know, Lamont Cranston as the Shadow. And I don't think he had the Orson Welles ones. I forget who was doing the voice, but that laugh and all that. And in the 80s, they brought the character, Howard Chaykin brought the character into modern day, which was then the 80s. And he traded in his 45s for a pair of, like, Mac-10s or something.
Right?
Mac-10s, yeah.
Mac-10!
And, 45 ACP Mac-10s, and he would just, like, it was very violent. Like, the comic, I picked it up, and I used to go to Friendly Frank's Comics, which was the comic that started the comic book. They arrested Friendly Frank for selling ElfQuest, because it had, like, lewd scenes in it or something, and they deemed it morally whatever, and his case started the comic book Legal Defense Fund.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was the comic store I used to go to.
Well, yeah, cool. You went there because you knew there were naked elves.
Because they had ElfQuest. Wow. Yeah, no. on the shelf at Friendly Frank's, I saw my first Shadow comic that I picked up, and it was a picture of a... It was a cover with a guy. It was Kyle Baker art. And Kyle Baker drew like nobody I had ever seen, you know. Very kind of like almost a photorealistic face, but on like a cartoon body. Really weird looking. And it was a guy like with the light on him standing in an alley. It was very blue hued tones against a brick wall. You could see the shadow's shadow like profile looming over him. And he's looking back over his shoulder and there's a guy falling in front of him. And he has a barbecue fork. And he's looking back, and blood is just, like, spurting out of this guy's neck. And I was like, what the fuck is this? It's awesome. And so I picked it up, and that was the Seven Deadly Fins storyline, which was the Shadow going against this crime family. And God, it was cinematic and funny and weird. Like, they were stuffing drugs into really high-priced toys at a toy store. And so then he sent his agents to buy the toys, and they were like, no, ma'am, you can't buy these. And, you know, then the Shadow would just come in and wipe everybody out with his Mac-10s and stuff. But I followed that religiously. And this was before the internet, so I had no idea what was coming ever. There was no pages where you could go on and talk about stuff and all that. So there was, like, no fan base that I could connect with and everything except the letters page. So in the last story arc, the Shadow got killed by a guy that was obsessed with poisons and kept like a poison tooth and bit it and sprayed poison in his face and killed him and something. So his sons tried to take him back to Shambhala, which was the this kind of like high-tech, you know, Himalayan whatever, where he had learned to become a Shadow Warrior and learn to cloud men's minds and all this
Wakanda
kind of stuff.
Wakanda?
Kind of like Wakanda, but this is before Wakanda.
Iron Fist place.
This is like 1930s, like, goes all the way back to the 1930s lore. So, his sons were kind of bumblers, and it took a really comedic turn towards the last arc and everything, where, like, they're trying to bring his body back, and their plane gets shot down by communist Chinese or something, and then they're dragging his body on a sled, and then they shoot down a helicopter with a rocket launcher, and the blade chops his head off, and they've only got his head. And then
weekend,
like,
at Shambhala's.
It was crazy. So then they try to get his head back from all these weird townspeople that they meet, and this rock star obsessed with, like, dead celebrities collects his body, and it's so crazy. It was really out there, and I feel like Condé Nast. Condé Nast, the publishers who... I learned this later, that Condé Nast did not, like... I don't know if they weren't paying attention or what, but...
No one was minding
the story. They fucking finally were like, what the hell is going on with the Shadow? We can't have this happen. But I was so into it. And they finally resurrected the Shadow in Shambhala, but they didn't have his body. So they had to put it on, like, a robotic frame. And it was ridiculous, because he still had the hat and everything. But he had this, like, RoboCop body that could shoot rockets and all this stuff. And so
good
then
luck
he
hiding
was,
that in the shadows.
It finished, it got to the last thing, and the next story arc was, you know, announced in the bottom. It said next, like, Shadow Blood and Iron or something. Nuts and Bolts, it was called. And he was going to face Shiwan Khan, his deadliest foe, who they thought had died in the Howard Chaykin series, but brought him back with a robot body, too. And I was, like, waiting for it. And then it never showed up on the stands again. And for years, I had no idea what happened to this comic. And, then I read later that Condé Nast, like, dropped the hammer on it. And then now the Shadow is back in the 30s, and they never bring him in the present. And it was, like, but it was the best series while it lasted. It had so many great moments. But, yeah, that was my favorite comic in the 80s, I think.
My entry into comics was all from the X-Men cartoon in the 90s and Silver Surfer cartoon. Then Spider-Man cartoon, too.
Mm-hmm.
So Spider-Man was my favorite character. Followed very closely by X-Men. But those cartoons honestly had a lot of really interesting and weird, kind of far-out moments that you wouldn't necessarily expect.
That was the 90s Spider-Man?
The 90s
cartoon?
Ones, yeah. Especially the Silver Surfer. But
yeah,
like,
you had me watch that, and I liked it a lot. It was really good. I had no idea about the Silver Surfer character before.
Extremely cool and trippy and a little bit...
morose.
Yeah, like, morose.
But
and,
like
and,
deep, you know?
Yeah.
Sad.
It was not like necessarily an action show, and the X-Men cartoon is where I came across all the Dark Phoenix stuff, and they went to the Savage Land in that cartoon. They went all over the goddamn place. It was cool.
But they had Morph, though.
He died in the very first episode, yeah. So.
Not soon enough.
It was fine. Although he did come back eventually. Was there any other shapeshifters in that series? I mean, well, Mystique, of course.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought a blue skinned lady was too
racy,
difficult to get into.
Too
so
dark
skinned. They had to make it.
Yeah.
They had to make ethnic. It more accessible for the whiteies. I remember my friend and I were watching the cartoon, and like, I don't remember what the context was or what the episode was, but they were like, someone had been kidnapped or something, and they were like, who did this? And Charles was like, it was Magneto. And they're like, how do you know? And he goes, my watch has been magnetized. And he dropped it, and it stuck to his...
wheelchair?
It stuck to his wheelchair. And we were like, oh, Magneto! It was great.
What about a favorite comic moment, Jeff? Did you have one?
I have so many, it's hard to think of a particular one. I mean, oh gosh, you know, my friends, you know, when we did get into comic books, we got into it pretty hard. And so we would each buy, like, I was collecting all the different Spider-Man lines at the time.
Uh-huh.
And there was, like, Amazing Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man.
Spider-Man with Todd McFarlane, just
Spider-Man. Web of Spider-Man, just plain Spider-Man. Uncanny Spider-Man. And then, so I would, like, get a ton of them. This is before they got too expensive. And then my other friends would, like, get Flash, Superman, Hulk, you know, whatever.
And he had all the bases.
My other
covered.
Friend was doing Thor, New Warriors, stuff like that, Guardians of the Galaxy. And then we'd get together and we would just spend all afternoon
trading.
Reading and then trading the cool. comic books and reading them. It was so good.
I didn't have any of that. I was an only child and lived around no kids. I had a comic shop near me, but I remember going into the comic shop too and like getting my pulls. And it was like, I had some weird indie comics. I had like Milk and Cheese, Evan Dorkin. I had Gru the Wanderer and stuff like that. And I remember the girl at the checkout going, oh, you like some really good comics. And then she's going through the thing and she got to Spawn or something. And she was like, never mind.
Totally Spawn is the best.
Totally busted me out in the line. It's funny.
Yeah, I loved the peripheral comic books.
Mm.
You know, Tales of the Ninja was just a weird
The Nom was a big one for me. Vietnam comic. Michael Goldman.
But then, you know, there's the Handbook of the Marvel Universe. There was What Ifs.
Yeah, those were cool.
But then there were also What Does.
Yeah.
Which were like
Brand X.
All parody.
Uh-huh. Frohman Man or Froberg Man or something?
Forbush Man.
Forbush Man, yeah.
And you what? Know, Peter Porker, Spider Ham.
Yeah.
And
I remember seeing Peter Porker, Spider Ham a lot in the
Brother
comic.
Voodoo showed up a lot in that comic
yeah.
for some reason.
And so, like reading weird comedy versions and, you know, appendices and stuff.
Yeah.
I was just such a non-discriminating.
Yeah, whatever grabbed my eye, I just kind of like picked up. I didn't really have. I remember that my comic book store near me had a requisite, like you had to get a certain number of titles to get pulls. So there were some that I was getting that I just didn't want, like Spawn
filler.
After a while, Spawn was like filler for me.
You know but, what I really liked about the What Does was that the artists were just allowed to have fun. Mm-hmm. And make it as funny as the writing was. And so there was all this, it was so densely packed with jokes, kind of like a Sergio Aragonés comic.
Yeah, like a Mad Magazine or something.
Yeah. And so like you could just, yeah, it was like Mad Magazine because it was a parody of comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And you could read it, you know, like 50 times and get something new out of it every time. Ah, good times.
I can tell you my
You remember,
favorite.
Did you ever like The Punisher when you were a kid, too? Or?
Oh, totally.
Do you remember Punisher Armory?
Yep.
Yeah, I used to get all those. I think I learned everything I know about guns from Punisher Armory and from Palladium's Jeez. Role-playing guide to, like, modern weapons or
that
something.
Should not have been a book.
Yeah, it was just all, like, it was crazy. It was just a comic with just guns and the Punisher talking about what he liked about a certain gun and everything.
I remember there was one particular page.
This one will explode a man's heart.
Where he was talking about, it was either tomahawk throwing axes or shuriken.
And he had that spring-loaded knife, too.
Yeah, and he was saying, like, it would make, like, a... You know, you could throw it across the room and it was silent and it never jammed. And uh-huh. It would make like a 3-inch incision, like in a man at 50 paces.
Yeah.
But then he also said, don't sit down with one in your pocket. I have a 3-inch incision somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I was
I
like,
remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny.
So, Ed, you are somewhat famous or infamous for keeping and posting a running tally of every single comic book movie you've ever seen and then ranking them.
Yeah, I got tired of people asking me what I thought of this, so I just was like, every time a new movie comes out, I put it on the list, and then I repost the list.
Yeah. So what do you think? Should we count down the top 10?
The Rocketeer is number one. It has never left.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's
that
awesome.
Was a great moment for me and Ed.
Yeah, when we went to see the... it was right before the Captain America First Avenger premiere, so they were showing they showed us a clip of it, like an exclusive clip. It was the best clip from that movie. It was when he jumped on the grenade. That was the best part of that movie.
We saw the Rocketeer with a Q&A.
Yeah, who's
the director?
And
stars Joe Johnston.
Joe Johnston, yeah. So it was for the Rocketeer. So we went to go see the Rocketeer, and Kevin Smith like talked to him and stuff.
And we got to see the costumes afterwards.
Yeah, the Rocketeer's awesome. I think it far surpasses the original graphic novel. This list is like not necessarily the best adaptation or the most faithful adaptation of a comic, but just my personal favorites.
Best movie experience.
I wish we had gotten a genuine Rocketeer sequel right after that movie. It wouldn't have been good, but what I never ever want is like a reboot of Rocketeer.
Too late. They're doing it.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they're doing it. I think it's
CG. It's not going to be a period piece.
I think the Rocketeer's a girl, too, yeah.
That's fine, but... It's not gonna have that same charm.
No, God, that movie's like wonderful. The best part of that movie, the best line, is still Paul Sorvino's line when they find out that spoilers, but whatever. It's from 1988 or something. So they find out that the Errol Flynn, Timothy Dalton character is a Nazi, and that the mafia's been kind of working for him and stuff. And he says, yeah, what do you think of Paul Sorvino, whatever his character's name was? Are you working for a stinking Nazi and all that or something? And he's like, is that true? And he's like, Nikki, you know, what does it matter where you get your money from? I became French there. I'm supposed to be German. And he says, look, it makes all the difference, pal, or something. I mean, I make an honest buck, but I'm 100% American. And I work for no stinking Nazi. Awesome.
Two-bit Nazi.
Number two for me is my favorite Marvel movie, Iron Man, the original Iron Man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's how I got my job at Marvel.
How's that?
Because
putting an arc reactor in your chest?
I was interviewing with the guy who was interviewing interns at Marvel Studios, and I was like, I just geeked out on him. I was like, what's going on with Iron Man, with the Iron Man movie? And he was like, oh, you know, it's this and that, it's the rights are here and there. But it showed him that I was like a fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the job.
Cool. Sweet. Should have kept it.
Well, I fucking tried, believe me. I should have kept that non-paid internship.
But the first Iron Man movie is like just a perfect metaphor for a guy who's like a bastard in the beginning and totally, literally has a change of heart. Yeah. And literally and metaphorically has a change of heart. It's awesome.
Wow.
I like Ant-Man. You poo-pooed my decision there. That was number three for me.
Number three, you're...
Yeah. I thought Ant-Man was really fun.
Was
and
not having fun in the theater on that movie.
God, it was so imaginative to me. I loved the fast. It was. Remember when we went to Comic-Con and we heard? What's his name? You were there, with
Edgar
me.
Wright.
Edgar Wright. Edgar Wright talking about how he wanted to do Ant-Man.
Yeah, I don't think any of that got in there.
When he was doing the fights, because I had never thought about Ant-Man that way. I thought he shrinks, okay, and like.
Thomas the Tank Engine made me laugh, but they gave it away in the trailer.
But we went to Comic-Con and we saw Edgar Wright originally talking about his initial ideas for Ant-Man. This was before the Marvel Universe ever started in cinema. Marvel Cinematic Universe ever started and everything. Maybe we just had Iron Man, I don't remember. But and he was like, yeah, Iron Man is like a spy and he can be in a fight with a guy and instantly turn small, run up his gun and punch him in the face and all that. And I was like, whoa, that blew my mind. I'd never read Ant-Man, so I never really thought about it. That he still has his normal human strength while he's a little guy and everything.
I thought Thor 3 was 10 billion times better than Ant-Man.
Agreed.
More that was fun. All right.
More fun.
But I loved Ant-Man. Number four for me was Captain America Winter Soldier. It might even surpass Ant-Man. That's a great movie. And I almost didn't see it because I hated First Avenger.
Yeah, Captain America 2 was a high watermark.
You hated First Avenger?
I loved the first half of
First
Avenger.
Yeah, first half is really good.
The first half is like the best the Marvel Universe has ever been on film.
Off the rails a bit.
And then as soon as he leaves the USO, it's like, hurry up, we got to get him in modern day. And I was like, F this. The death of Bucky was like nothing, you know? Like, I'm like, are people even going to remember who Bucky is for Winter Soldier? And I almost didn't go see this. And I'm really glad I did because it was awesome.
And then Civil War.
Yeah, I didn't care for that.
I liked Civil War.
It's all right. It's probably better than...
Some of the sequences in it are amazing and hold up. You can just watch them over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
The stairwell fight sequence.
That's awesome. Don't when miss. He's saving Bucky from the cops. Yeah. That's
pretty great. Oh, yeah, right. Is that Civil War? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. That was good.
And then the Black Panther.
Yeah, see, but Black Panther. You, awesome. I feel like for as amazing with story and everything that you are, you're really good at enjoying a movie for its like component parts.
Yeah.
I guess everybody's like that to an extent. But like if a movie loses me oftentimes, especially if I've paid like $15 to go to the theater, if it loses me at any one point, then I'm kind of out a lot of the time.
Yeah, I do that a lot, but
despite my best efforts.
Yeah, I mean I definitely get bumped out of movies when I start thinking about them critically. Yeah. And if you're not on the journey, that's a bad sign that the movie's lost you.
Right.
But I am more persnickety than most.
What am I at? Five? Five for me was
you're at four.
Oh, no.
Four was Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah,
Winter
Soldier. All right. Jesus, Ant-Man. All
five, right. I went for Batman Begins. I really like it. I like it the more I watch it, actually. And number six right after that was Dark Knight, because the Joker is the best movie Joker there is, I think. I like it better than Nicholson, personally.
Where's really your love like for the Burton Nicholson Batman? Joker.
This is the thing about the Burton Batman. When
what
I was
about
in
Batman Returns,
it was in the '80s. Batman Returns. No, I'm not into those. They're too circusy,
cool
and
I like it a
they're,
lot.
They're cool now. Now I appreciate them, but like in the '80s,
he kills dudes.
I was all hyped up to see Batman, and because I was fresh off the Dark Knight and the other one, the Alan Moore one, Killing Joke, and I'm like Batman's, and everybody was talking about, oh, it's Batman like you've never seen it before. It's dark and it's gritty and. It was none of those things. It's not dark and gritty at all. It's goofy and circusy and just a little bit removed from the Adam West Batman. But now...
I would say it's grittier than the fucking Christian Bale movies.
No, not at all. It's a circus.
Just because the color palette is brown in the Christian Bale movies doesn't make them grittier.
Yeah,
like Batman,
but he's...
Tim Burton Batman straight up murders people.
Yeah.
He like explodes them with dynamite,
but it's all
like
very cartoony.
Throwing dudes off buildings and stuff.
It's really cartoony.
I think you're coloring. Well, Joker's cartoony, but that's because he's the Joker. I think the Joel Schumacher ones are kind of coloring your memory of
the Penguin
one
was really twisted and dark,
really dark and gritty.
Yeah,
and it had
Alfred
DJing with his and scratching
that's
his
right.
CD.
It had what?
I played the
Alfred
City
like
a
harp from hell.
Exactly.
So good.
Yeah. This is like
homage to the 60s.
This is where my Friday the 13th over your Freddy Krueger comes in again, because I hate that kind of shit. And when I saw that shit, I was like, when does this fucking get good? When I was a kid watching it, I'm like,
wow.
When does this get good? It's all goofy and silly.
I'm going to also say... Loved Batman Forever. When I went, I don't even remember if I saw Batman Returns in the theater, but we went to the theater to see Batman Forever off the goodwill from Batman Returns, like subsequent viewings.
But
and
then,
loved it because also Jim Carrey.
But literally, like last year, I watched Tim Burton Batman again, and I was like, "This is fun. This is cool." And it's really awesome.
I don't like part
looking.
One that much, but I like part two a lot, and I have a
two was okay
soft spot for part three.
Part one and two hit me at like the perfect age.
Mm.
Yeah, but Batman and Robin was one of the first. I say this all the time, but it was definitely one of the first movies where I was like, this is bullshit.
First movie that did that for me was either 98 Godzilla or The Rock.
That Godzilla was on that list for me, too.
The Rock is a masterpiece. How dare you?
I watched that, and I was like, this is the first time I thought to myself, an awesome cast does not make a movie. This was
now,
goofy.
Now, here's an aside, a side bag. I love the movie Encino Man.
Uh-huh.
But I remember watching it on VHS like one summer vacation day and being like, ooh, I just wasted an hour and a half. Like, as much as I love that movie, I could have been doing so many other better things with my summer vacation day. Anyway,
I've never walked out of a movie, have you? Once I paid for a movie, I've never walked out.
I walked out of Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Okay.
The live action one.
No, I never walked
out.
I
like 10 minutes in, I was like, this is so... horrendously bad.
Yeah. I've wanted to walk out of many, but I've never actually done it.
I almost walked out of Blair Witch Project, but I was kept
just
with it because I was like, no, Sandra was sick. I told you this story.
Yep.
I kept with it because I was like, this is supposed to be awesome. When am I going to get scared? Never happened.
Boogers.
You're not going to agree with the next one at all either. You don't like these Batman choices, and you're not going to like Man of Steel because that's the next one.
Nope.
Love Man of Steel. It's my favorite
Boo.
Superman movie.
What the fuck? Donner
yeah. Favorite over part one?
It is. It beat Superman the movie for me. Because Superman the movie, the Luthor stuff doesn't age very well.
Well,
really.
That's true.
It's very goofy.
It ages like a fine wine. You want to see a long arm? You want to see a real
I love it. I mean, it's great. I still watch it. And I love the flying sequence and all that. And Christopher Reeve is awesome. But
are we going
Man of Steel
to
does
Addis
it for me.
Ababa?
I tell you, I cannot read Ed's mind. That's for sure. I don't know what this list is going to entail.
4, 5, 6, 7. That's a reference to the movie. Man of Steel was number 7. X-Men First Class was number 8 for me.
Jesus Christ, man.
Magneto was a Nazi hunter.
Terrible choices.
Was like, whoa. That just
okay, so
really knocked
them
it out
based
for
on
me.
Moments, too.
When he walked into the bar and killed the Nazi guys in the bar, fuck, I love that movie.
You should have killed me when you had the chance.
That's a great one. That's number 11, actually, X-Men, X2 United.
Yeah.
I watched it on, I hadn't seen, a bunch of my buddies went to see it in the theater and I didn't go, I forget why, but, so I bought the DVD sight unseen because everyone was going apeshit over it, and I watched it on my computer because that was the only DVD player I had at the time, and I was like, this really feels like a random assortment of unconnected scenes to me. So I didn't like it the first time I saw it. Because that's really what it is. It doesn't flow very well. It is a great movie.
First one
but
or the second one?
Second one.
Disagree. what are we at? 8? No, that was 8. 9 for me was Spider-Man 2. Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2. Because...
Oh, that one is so good.
Yeah, it's such a great movie. What's his name? Dr. Octopus.
And
whoa,
they did bite that subway scene with this tugboat, and which I love Spider-Man Homecoming. I really, really enjoyed that movie.
It was really good.
Pretty good, yeah.
But I didn't understand why that tugboat didn't sink.
No. The only problem with Spider-Man Homecoming is too many blue-collar guys. Get rid of them.
Motherfucker.
That's not America.
And again, another bougie movie. And number 10 was Superman the movie, Richard Donner, for me.
All right, well, yeah.
Say,
still in the top
Jim,
10.
Where the hell
is a bad outfit.
That's a bad Woo! Outfit. Yeah. Although I like...
Who, you
I was
got me. Who's got you?
I think awesome. I was watching part 2, and I don't know, it must not have been... It must have been the theatrical cut or something, and I was like, hey, this is pretty good. And then, like, the wind started blowing, and, like... People were like holding onto telephone poles and getting blown backwards, and it was like
the guy on the roller skates.
And I was like, "Whoa, what has happened?"
Super breath.
It was
that one dropped
very
in my
strange.
That dropped in my estimation. That one
very cartoony.
So, new question:
where does Crow fall on that goddamn list?
Crow is, let me tell you, it's really right up here. Let's see. What did I say was 11? X-Men 2, so 12, 13,
X-Men 14, First Class, I think.
16, top 20.
All right. I was afraid it was going to be like number 50-something.
No, that's a good movie. It's a great movie.
So, new question. Is there any comic book that hasn't been made into a movie that you'd love to
I'm going to go with Saga, which was one of my picks. I think
I just started reading
movie.
That literally this week, Saga.
Very good.
Shadow for me.
It's been made into
it's been
a
made
movie.
Into a great movie.
No, but
so much fun.
Specifically the Andy Helfer, Kyle Baker run of The Shadow in 1980, where he was in modern day. It was awesome. I love. There's a comic I love by John Wagner who created Dread called Killing Man. Yeah, the Killing Joke. No, Killing Game. The Button
Killing
Man.
Game.
Yeah, Button Man. Love Button Man. That's if nobody's read that. That's about a guy who. Is a British mercenary, ex-mercenary, and he's, like, fallen on hard times, and his old mercenary buddy comes to him and says, hey, I've got this thing I'm in where rich people that we don't see, they just talk to him on the phone, they're called voices, they pay for mercenaries to fight in the countryside and in the streets of London and stuff, and
the original
it's
Purge.
Really awesome. Yeah.
I would love to see this comic called Mazed. Get made into a movie that's Amazed by Ryan.
Is that about an
Gerasi.
Ice troll? Ice yeah. mining troll?
Troll gets locked inside a maze on his rounds.
I thought it was about
pretty,
corn
pretty great.
Fields.
Pretty great.
I thought it was about corn. Yeah, that was my list. You want to know what's at the bottom?
Sure.
Transformers is at the very bottom.
Oh, good.
Last two for the bottom 10. Ghost Rider. Sorry, guys.
Oh, no. Ghost Rider. Sorry, guys.
That was an adventure.
Original Ghost Rider. So much fun.
Yeah.
The night, not the movie.
When we went to see the Ghost Rider movie, we went and had lunch beforehand.
Have we not talked about this before?
I don't think we have. And Ryan and I, with our love of terrible jokes and puns, were trying to think of jokes so bad that it would be hilarious
all
if
the
they
bone
were
related
in the movie.
Puns
so it's like, I've got a bone to pick with you. And then the movie started, and it was just all these terrible bone puns.
They like were they like, hurt you.
How could this be? We were like, our
Sam Elliott's voice. Sam Elliott's voice totally seduced me in those trailers.
And Nat the Rider takes over.
I was all into seeing that, and it was
Sam Elliott's voice has seduced you so many times.
When will I ever learn? I don't know.
Sam Elliott makes me cry every time I watch Prancer at Christmas time.
Ghost Prancer.
So this one will piss Ryan off. My the top of my bottom 10 list is Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I hate that
movie.
Wow.
Both of you, yeah.
Way
I know you guys
bottom?
Love that movie. I can't stand
Man.
It.
Wow.
It's so just much fun.
No, not
it doesn't
fun
make
at
a
all.
Ton of sense, but it's fun. It
makes no sense.
Well, it's not supposed to make.
I know. It's. I know
sense.
It's a big stylistic thing, and I know you got to be into like. It's
Nintendo?
Like it's Nintendo video games, and I was never really into. I told you I was hurt by Nintendo, and I never went back.
What? I don't remember that.
I played Nintendo religiously when Nintendo first came out. Like everybody, I played Dragon Warrior.
Oh, Rob
I
the
played,
Robot.
I told you I had the robot and the light gun. I played Duck Hunt. I played Zelda. Everything. And then they came out with Super Nintendo, and that was the first time I'd ever heard of. I can't play my Nintendo games on the new Nintendo. Fuck you, Nintendo. And I never went back.
And fuck you, Scott Pilgrim.
And fuck you, Scott
20
Pilgrim.
20 years from now.
For reminding me of how Nintendo touched me.
Where did it touch you?
I'll
Where did
show
Rob
you on
the robot.
Touch
you?
Show me the robot. I'll point.
Find us at sixdemonbagpodcast.com, sixdemonbagpodcast@gmail.com, Facebook and Instagram, and on Twitter at sixdemonpodcast. Special thanks to Colleen Green for the use of her song, Why Do You Call Me, off the Green One album.
This is Ed. If you want to find more about me, you can look at my blog, emertilek.wordpress.com, Delirium Tremens, or Facebook. I'm there all the time.
This is Jeff. You can find more at Carter Wrote It on Facebook and Twitter.
This is Drew. You can find me on Twitter at GenFactor.
You can find me, Ryan, on YouTube at 20th Century RG with the number 20.